welcome to another episode of the You Down with OVP podcast. I'm Mick, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, James. James, we're back for another season, our third season. How's it going, man?
It's going great. I'm super pumped for season three, and I'm excited to talk baseball. It feels good to talk shop again and to see that lovely mug of yours. And we kind of slacked last year on the cast in year two. You know, I think with like a lot of people with the pandemic and the really kind of crazy, you know, season, we slacked a little bit. And I wanted to mention a lot has happened since that last podcast. The last podcast we did, I'm embarrassed to say, was in August. So, you know, just to give you some retrospect there, in that time, I gained back the 15 pounds that I'd lost all summer. You'd quit drinking and then presumed to start drinking again. And I have to say, you also have really made the website look awesome. I'm very impressed with it. You know, after seeing some clunky websites when I tried to help my parents sign up for, you know, a COVID shot, looking at this one, it's integrated really well with the graphics. And I think it just reads really well. I like that it has that little margin on the side that's got the trailing kind of Twitter history and everything. And it's pretty seamless the way you pull different images and the like that one graphic you had of the spreading of the home runs for who was it that you had who's hugging the, was it Bregman?
Bregman, right? Bregman.
Yeah. Yes. So I just have to say that the website looks awesome.
Thanks.
And then you probably knew I was going to mention it. It's not at all baseball related, but we do have a little bit of a platform here with talking and delivering a message to fans. And I would be remiss if I didn't take at least 10 seconds just to say we did lose Tommy Heinsohn in 2020. And a lot of people, I didn't realize because the NBA TV has gotten prevalent and people can hear different, you know, announcing feeds. And it's crazy to me that Tommy Heinsohn, besides maybe people that just don't like the Celtics, a lot of people didn't like him nationally because they said he's too much of a homer, which he clearly is. He's way too much of a homer. But it just, I can't believe people want a neutral broadcast. Like, I'd want to hear the homer of a team I don't like as opposed to, like, them being scared. You know, like the national broadcasts are so neutered. They won't call a foul, or they don't have any opinion on any fouls. You know, they're too scared to say anything. But I did want to say Tommy Heinsohn, he passed away, and he was a hero of mine. And people in our age group might just think of him as a Celtics announcer, but he did win 8 NBA championships as a player. He won 2 as a coach. He was Rookie of the Year, Coach of the Year, helped establish the Players Union. And he was just, you know, one of the greats. And also, which is personal to me, he kind of shaped, and I think this is why I bring it up in our podcast, just kind of how I view sports and the lens with which I view them. For those who don't know Tommy Heinsohn, besides his statistics I just mentioned, his broadcast style is outrageously, he's the biggest homer that's ever lived. Anything that's ever happened was a foul against the Celtics. And he once compared Greg Steensma to Bill Russell. So he thought every player was like the best player in the world. But it's kind of a fun way to view sports. My home team, like, I don't get the negativity of sports radio and stuff. I want to get excited about my team. I want a hype man. Basically, when I listen to a basketball game, I just want a guy to hype me up and tell me why, like, it's super fun to watch this. And he did that, and that's kind of how I view sports. So I apologize for getting off topic with fantasy baseball, but I did want to say he was the best. And he broadcast for the Celtics for, 40 years, something like that? Been with the Celtics since the 50s.
Yeah.
And if anybody who doesn't know about Tommy Heinsohn, take 5 minutes, pull him up on Wikipedia, and it's pretty. He's a pretty cool guy.
What you were saying about, like, the way that you sort of appreciate sports, I hope that our podcast, like, sort of exudes that. Like, we like to hype guys up. You know, I wrote an article recently about Alex Bregman. I'm like, I don't think he's going to be as good as he was in 2019. But I'm not, like, trying to shit on the guy. I'm just saying, like, he's a really, really good hitter. He's just not, for me, a third rounder in fantasy.
Yeah, it's what you choose to spend your time with. You're choosing to watch sports, and if you're not doing it to enjoy yourself, then why are you doing it? Spend that 2 hours that you do watching the Sox, the Celtics, the Flyers, whomever, and just do something else with it. Like, if you're going to be just bitter and kind of miserable. Anyways, 2020 happened. We learned some things. How much weight should we put on what we learned in 2020 fantasy baseball wise?
The players who I'll put weight on are the players who clearly made, like, a big change. clearly showed up and, you know, said like, I'm for real. And Kyle Tucker is one of those guys who went from being like a 15th rounder, top two or three rounder. And maybe next year he'll be in the first round. So of course I'm going to buy his 2020 season. He finally got that playing time that we always wanted. Dusty Baker gave it to him. Thank goodness.
Yeah, that was the worst, man. He deserved that playing time for what, like 2 years probably? So yeah, you say 2020, you're looking more at they move the needle in the right ways with certain, you know, underlying stats.
Playing time as well.
Yeah. It's also just a weird season, man. You know, you had written about Yelich, and who knows if last year was an anomaly or not. And you wrote a lot of reasons why it isn't. But I did see a thing that you didn't mention where I guess last year they changed it so that you can't see in-game video. And this year you're allowed to see in-game video, but you have to do it on like an iPad. You can't do it in like a room with a group of people. And I guess Christian's one of those guys that they think that might have attributed to some of his stats. Who knows how much weight to put behind that. It seems to me an interesting story. I don't know how
100%
much it really is pertinent to what he was performing like, but it could have been. You know, that's a big thing. If you're somebody who wants to go watch like how that pitch broke or what you did wrong, or, you know, like, and you can make in-game adjustments on the fly, that seems like a pretty big deal.
Totally. Yelich, Javier Baez, J.D. Martinez, and a couple other guys were really vocal. Like, yeah, this is tough. Like, I really rely on that in-game video. And I heard Eno Saris on the Rates and Barrels podcast recently talk about, and it is about like, oh, what was that pitch and stuff like that. But it's also about like their own personal timing and figure out like when he's at this point in his delivery, my timing needs to be timed up so that you're able to sort of figure that out with video. So there's multiple angles to that. So I definitely buy it to a certain extent.
That's just another thing to say. It's a wonky season, man, or whack. There's data to be mined and there's information to be learned, but coming to conclusions based off 2020 is a little bit hard to do. So with that being said, talking about how we're going to look at 2020 and how we're going to predict going forward, should we go forward into the mock draft here?
Let's start the mock draft. So we're going to go through fantasypros.com to do our mock draft. We are going to go with 12 teams, 8 pitchers. So I'm going to hit the randomize button on draft position. Let's see where we end up. In third.
All right. Nice.
So we have our choice of whoever's left of somebody like Acuna, Soto, Tatis, of course, Trout, as well as Mookie Betts. When it comes to draft this year, my favorite is like anywhere 1 through 8, because the way I'm looking at it, those 5 guys I mentioned, and then the 3 dominant pitchers, Bieber, DeGrom, and Cole, that's my top 8. So, all right, the first 2, Acuna went number 1 overall, Betts went number 2 overall. So we have our choice of Tatis, Trout, Soto, or even Jacob DeGrom. What's your first impression there, Jamie?
I like Tatis, you know, is my first impression. You know, I'm not going to complain first off with any of those 3 guys.
You're not going to kick Soto out of bed.
No, exactly. You know, exactly. And I love Soto. And I think, and again, you know, you take it with a grain of salt, but Soto had said that he wants to start running more. Did you see that?
Yes, that was very interesting.
So, you know, that's like, hey, take Soto and give him an extra 5-10 bags. You know, that's nothing to sneeze at. And he did steal 6 bases last season in a shortened season. So just say Soto gives you 15 stolen bases, 12 stolen bases. It's pretty nice. And then, you know, he did 12 in the last full season that we had. So I think that would be pretty cool, you know, to see. So I wouldn't kick any of them out of bed for eating crackers. I kind of like Tatis just because I've never had him on a, you know, I've never had any shares of him before. You know, it's tough to go against Trout too. What do you think?
Soto is a beast. And in our mock draft last year, we mentioned, we're like, this is a guy who's going to be in the conversation for number 1 next year. And you know what? Yeah. It is even smarter is if we actually drafted him that early, because he had the season to back it up. No, you can't go wrong with Tatis. You can't go wrong with Soto. Trout is obviously amazing, and his power seems to be just increasing as he ages, but his stolen bases are going down. I like Tatis. I like the fact that, you know, he's like this Gen Z star. He's becoming the face of Major League. So why not? Let's do it.
Yeah, I think they're all pretty comparable, and let's go with something fun, you know?
So quite a few guys went off the board. But we can tell you who is left, and that is Lucas Giolito, Aaron Nola, Anthony Rendon. And then you get into the very controversial names like Adalberto Mondesi and Max Scherzer with his age still going in the second round. Does any name there jump out to you?
A few jump out to me. Quick question that doesn't necessarily jump out to me. Did Aaron Nola, is that a blind spot on my part? Did he have a monster 2 years, or what's going on there?
Yeah, he had a solid 2020, 3.28 ERA, 1.08 with 96 Ks in 71 innings. Definitely really solid. And he did have that, you know, a little bit of a hiccup in 2019 with a 3.87 ERA. He is a bit of a nibbler when his command is a little off. He can walk people, but he's pretty solid. But I think one trend that we are seeing a lot is people taking more starters in the first two rounds. It was like popularized by a guy named Toby from the podcast Bat Crazy, and he called it Pocket Aces. So a lot of people are doing that this year. Part of me wants to zig when so many people are zagging. And
yeah, no, I hear you. And I guess it was just a little, do you think it's fair to say it's a little surprising when the mock draft started spitting things out and then the next pitcher we saw was Aaron Nola? Like, maybe that's unfair to him. I'm not saying he, you know, doesn't deserve it. And he did have a pretty monster season. And he's probably just a blind spot on my part. That did kind of, you know, the way this thing's projecting people, it's Giolito and Nola are the next two pitchers that they recommend, at least. And then you see your Scherzers.
And yeah, no, it is a little jarring to see Nola in the second round. He's not a guy who is necessarily going to give you a sub 3 ERA. You know, he's around 3. This projection on Fantasy Pros has him for 3.67. It's good, but it's not like shutdown ace, which, you know, of the starting pitchers left, like Kershaw has never really been bad. Kershaw, I think the worst ERA he's ever had is a 3.08. It's pretty amazing. So his worst season ever is just about where Nola was last year. So it's something to consider. I was also going to say one of my favorite Twitter follows is Doug Thorburn, and he's been saying sort of the zig when others are zagging thing. In terms of starting pitching, this is really up in the air year for how many innings people are going to get. So maybe in a year like this, it's better to get those mid-round guys who are more quality over quantity. Maybe like a Jesus Luzardo, a guy who's going to give you good innings, but they're going to be not as many innings.
I like that idea. I noticed in my research, I kind of like Jose Abreu, to be honest. He had an absolute monster year, and sure, he's not going to have the same year. Like, I don't expect him to just crush it again like he did in a small sample size. But 35 home runs, 37 home runs, 36 home runs, 18 home runs in the shortened season. He's sticking around 300 for the entire time he's doing it, and putting up close to, you know, 100, 120 RBIs. I think, and he's a guy I like. You know, I've always liked Jose Abreu, and I think it's cool that he's still doing it. And, you know, both of us tend to like, I know you like your like Nelson Cruz's. I think sometimes it's like, hey, they might fall off a cliff, but it's a risk. And if they don't fall off a cliff, they're going to just have a, say, 90%, 80%, still pretty good numbers.
Yeah. A lot of people talk about RBIs. RBIs aren't a good stat to look at. But when you're somebody like Abreu hitting in that lineup with, you know, Anderson, Moncada, Eloy Jimenez, Nick Madrigal, these guys in front of him getting on base, he's going to bat them in. So you can expect a good RBI total. He had 122, led the league in 2019. Last year, he had 60. Did he win the MVP?
He did win the MVP, yeah.
3.70 average, 19 home runs, 60 RBIs. That's a lot of home runs in 60 games. So I'm done with taking Abreu here and seeing how the draft takes us. All right. So far we got Fernando Tatis and Jose Abreu. The next pick is just 5 picks away. It's coming right back to us. The people who are available are Lucas Giolito. Adalberto Mondesi is still available. Aaron Nola, Ozzie Albies, Clayton Kershaw, Rafi Devers, who I'm a big fan of, DJ LeMahieu. This kind of a empty patch for outfielders until you get to Eloy Jimenez, Lewis Robert, another White Sox, Marcel Ozuna.
Where do you stand on kind of stacking a little bit on a team? Do you try to avoid it? Do you like to do it?
I have no problem with it. If the stats say those two guys are the best players available, It's not like basketball where like there's only one ball, you know, in baseball. Yeah. Like it's their turn to hit. So I have no problem.
And it helps though too. It's just kind of more of an all or nothing approach. You know, if something goes sideways, one of them's not hitting the other one in or vice versa or what have you, you know, they can impact each other positively or negatively.
That's a good point. I feel like the White Sox are a pretty good team to bank on if that's the direction you're thinking.
I would say if we want to stick with not going the pitching route, I think it makes sense to stay infield. I don't think we should necessarily reach to outfield yet. I think we'll get better value.
The pitchers, I will say, Lucas Giolito is the one that is available. 3.48 ERA, 1.04 WHIP last year, 97 Ks in 72 innings. But he played in the AL Central. And so many pitchers who pitched in the Central, whether it be AL or NL Central last year, had amazing seasons. Kenta Maeda, Bauer, Yu Darvish, Dallas Keuchel, all these guys had sub-1 WHIPs. Shane Bieber, of course, Zach Plesac. Does that make you a little nervous about them duplicating their success?
Yeah, no, it does. I agree with you. I think that's a big red flag. I don't feel super strongly. What are you thinking? Where's your heart taking you?
If we had taken Soto, then one of the shortstops is a possibility, like Mondesi. If we pick a pitcher, I would say Kershaw.
I think Kershaw. I think Normally I usually pick a pitcher in the second or third round, you know, so I don't think it's as much reacting as more as just what I kind of prefer. I like to get a solid pitcher early.
Me too. Most drafts, I end up with a pitcher in the first two rounds.
Yeah.
Be flexible, but, you know, we're in the third here. So to get a pitcher, we got shortstop, we got a pitcher, and we got Jose Abreu at first base. Now, the next pick that we can make, some of the names available around this ADP who are still available are Starling Marte, Aaron Judge, Pete Alonso, Blake Snell, Zach Gallen, JT Realmuto, Tyler Glasnow. And also Luke Voit.
What are you thinking?
I'm big on not drafting any catcher, but drafting somebody like Realmuto in the fourth or fifth round. And also Vladito is available. His ADP is 54. We are at 46. Now, he hasn't had the season that we have expected yet, but the projection systems really like him. They like how hard he hits the ball. So definitely interesting. And just somebody who's fun to root for. If we had Tatis and Vladito, it would be kind of a fun team to root for as a fantasy team.
Yeah. No, you know, it's funny you mentioned it because there might be a hard numbers reason to go somewhere else. You're never going to have to convince me to draft Vladimir Guerrero Jr. like you can just say his name and it's like you've had me at hello. I think, and I actually wanted to talk about it. So now's as good a time as any. This Blue Jays team is fucking fun, man, as far as the bats are concerned. I was looking today, you know, getting ready for the podcast, and there's probably like four guys that are projected to hit 30 home runs and have 10 stolen bases. Like, this team is a fun offense. I made a note of it, so just to pull it up, I'm not doing this, you know, off just blind memory. But if you look, Teoscar Hernandez, Lourdes Gurriel, Bo Bichette,
George Springer, yeah.
All those guys are projected to hit around 30 dingers. I think Bo Bichette's less, but around, say, 20, 30 dingers and 10 stolen bases. That's a fun team, and I think I'm going to kind of have a hard time as a Sox fan not, you know, rooting for the Blue Jays this year.
Blue Jays are a team that are like the White Sox and the Padres that are just going to be fun to root for, but also for fantasy purposes, have fun lineups and lineups that you want to have a part of. It's stacked, and it goes from 1 to 8 with Rowdy Tellez at DH.
Yeah, and Rowdy Tellez is another surprise to me. To other people, he might not be a surprise, but I looked at some of his numbers too, and I was like, oh, this guy hasn't really been on my radar, but this Blue Jays lineup is just stocked with guys that really aren't on my radar that are just producers or projected to produce. It's a risky gambit. So, yeah, that's all a way of saying – I wanted to come into this mentioning the Blue Jays, and I would not be opposed to having shares of Vladito, and I think he's going to be pretty good. If you feel like it's a reach for us, I could go with Realmuto, which I think it's a fairly safe bet. So I would take Realmuto or Vladito.
When I'm doing my normal drafts, I have my spreadsheet up. I have my Z-scores that I calculated, and I also have something that I call ZAR, which means Z-score above replacement, and what that means is JT Realmuto, how much better is he in terms of Z-score to the 12th best catcher in your league if you're in a 12-team league? Because just hypothetically, the 12th best team in terms of catcher will have the 12th best catcher. JT Realmuto is considerably better than the 12th best catcher. And if you just consider that, he's the 14th most valuable player above replacement. That's why I like him so much in this fourth round area. But at the same time, getting a piece of a 21-year-old Vladito who is definitely going to or expected to hit that peak, you know, at some point. We know it's coming, might not be this year.
He's going to start raking. Yeah. He's like the most hyped prospect in the kind of league that focuses on how to actually identify a hyped prospect that we've seen in forever. So I imagine, you know, I'll be on record as saying I think this is going to be his breakout show this year. And I could be wrong. It's a risk because, you know, he hasn't as of yet broken out. So, yeah, if we're going to be choosing between Vladito and Realmuto, I could go either way.
I say we go Vladito because I'm going to have Realmuto in plenty of drafts. Let's just go Vladito.
I'm in. I think Vladito is the riskier but higher ceiling choice than Realmuto. And I think you need some of those to win the league.
Yeah, and the other guys that were around that area, Starling Marte, Blake Snell, Kenta Maeda, Josh Hader are still available. Pete Alonso is still available. Luke Voigt, but we have a first baseman. Jordan Alvarez, interesting, but DH only, util only. Those are probably the names I would consider at this point. I'm a big Maeda fan. Great, does a great job at contact management.
I don't know if I've heard you talk about Blake Snell lately. What do you think of him? He's kind of like, I feel like he's a little divisive.
I have Blake Snell in my Dynasty League. I'm really relying on Blake Snell this year. He's kind of like my ace. For one thing, I'm happy. I think his stock rises leaving Tampa. He's going to get more six-inning, seven-inning starts. And I know there's a perceived issue with third time around the order. But I just think everything weighs out that he'll get more wins because he'll be trusted to go into that sixth, seventh inning, whereas with Tampa, they yanked him in the fifth inning like they did World Series. So I think his stock goes up. It's not always that guy who's going to give you a low 3 ERA. Sometimes he has a low 4 ERA, but that's why we would be able to get him in this fifth round instead of the third round, I guess.
That would be my choice. If you get one, you know, sub 2 ERA Blake Snell this late, that can be the kind of thing that can win you the league that year. So that's what I would do.
All right. We took Snell, and I'm down with that. I'm down with the strikeouts that he gives you. So far, we got two starting pitchers, Jordan Alvarez, still available. And then after that, Michael Conforto is a name to consider. Keston Hiura, who I wrote about earlier in the offseason. I'm not 100% bullish on him. Eugenio Suarez. And those are probably the names that I would consider at this time.
You know, I would say of the names you listed, and I'll let you choose, Alvarez, Suarez, or Conforto. I'm a big fan of Conforto. I feel like the past 2 years, I think his growth has shown, you know, he's gotten better and better and better. You know, granted, last year was a shorter season. 243, 255, 322 is his batting average. So the past 3 years, his batting average has gone up with a considerable spike in 2020, which might not be super reflective. So let's just say Conforto or Jordan, and it's your call.
Yeah, I like the idea of getting Conforto here. Yeah, even though that 322 average won't be duplicated, we're not expecting it to. You know, he's projected for 265, but he's going to give you around 30 home runs, and he's going to chip in with seven or so steals. And since we don't have an outfielder, I kind of like getting one, you know.
I wouldn't be surprised if Conforto gives us 100 RBIs this year either.
Definitely. Mets are another team that improved. Francisco Lindor to the Mets. As a Phillies fan, it's really annoying how likable they are. Like Marcus Stroman. Obviously, we're big Thor fans on the podcast. Francisco Lindor, always a smile. And Jeff McNeil, I just like him. I like average guys who consistently hit 310 or better. So they
yeah,
just,
I love them. I love them. I've liked the Mets for a few years now, which is funny. It just happened organically. You know, there's a couple of teams. I like the Blue Jays, as we've discussed a lot. I like the Mets. Obviously, I like the Sox, but I need to like start reading like some hype shit on the Sox or something to get me fired up for it. I think they're going to be better than people expect, but I just don't see it, man. They're trying to be like Tampa Bay 2.0, I guess, and start to find better value and be more modern thinking and find areas that are unfocused on that are potential, you know, as far as where you spend your money and, you know, what's important to winning a season. But man, it's hard to get excited about it. And I don't think they're as good as Tampa Bay at either, but you know, I'm excited for baseball again, and I want to get excited for the Red Sox. I personally just have, I what I love, me and Mick, to the podcast faithful out here, you know, we're both, Mick is a long running Premier League fan and I'm fairly new to it. I got on with, Christian Pulisic when he, went to Chelsea. I was like, you know, I'm going to be a Chelsea fan. And one thing I love, and granted, they're terrible human beings probably, but I like the idea that these billionaires are like, clearly this is our hobby and we're just going to spend a shitload of money because we're fucking billionaires. Like, so why wouldn't we just spend tons of money? Like the idea that like John Henry is like, oh, I got to make sure to nickel and dime this shit. When it's like, you're a fucking billionaire. You bought a sports team because like, you're still a child, I guess. I guess maybe he's trying to do a business thing, but like most of these people, it's like, yo, you did this because you want to own a sports team. Just fucking spend some money and make our team awesome. Like they're the Red Sox. We should be spending. We shouldn't care about the luxury tax. Just spend as much money as you can. Like same with the Celtics. Like it just bugs me that these like Wick Prospect, these super rich people are worried about like going over a luxury tax or spending too much. What's another $10 million a year to you? And it's your group that's spending it too. And you make ungodly amounts of money on like $15 beers in the stands. But that's just the end of my rant. All right. So what are we looking at here? What's on the board for us?
We were talking about Mets and Cookie Carrasco jumps out here. We are at pick 75 overall. His ADP is 69. Nice. Besides 2019, when he had leukemia, was bad, going through those issues, he is really, really good. He's damn near like an ace. 2.91 ERA with a 1.21 WHIP last year.
Heck, yeah. I'm on board. I'm a Carrasco man. Not to say we shouldn't keep hyping him for those that don't know, but I think he's an absolute steal at this pick. I think he's going to have a continuation of the small sample size of last year. And I think that doing a sub 3.4 ERA for 4 years in a row, basically, not or 4 years out of five, and gives you an idea of the type of player
six
he
out
is.
Of seven.
And I think, yeah, six out of seven years. He's and watch Carlos Carrasco pitch. Like watch a game. The guy's got stuff. You know, he passes the eye test.
And the last thing I'll say about Carrasco is I should, for full transparency, just said. Kind of dinging those central pitchers. Well, he did have a 1.21 WHIP in that central, but we're talking about 6 out of 7 years with a ERA under 3.70. I'm going to buy that consistency.
Yeah, no. And I like you holding yourself accountable, you know, when it comes to recognizing that. Yeah, I'm a fan, you know, and it probably shows, but I think he's going to age fairly gracefully. 33 is a little bit old, but might bite me in the ass, but I'm not scared of it.
All right. So through seven rounds, we have Jose Abreu, Fernando Tatis Jr., Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Michael Conforto, not sure if he's a junior, Clayton Kershaw, Blake Snell, Carlos Carrasco. We got strikeouts. So one thing that we could consider is a second baseman. We do not have a second baseman. We could consider an outfielder, or we could really go in any direction.
I think we're pretty open right now. I think the program simulator is recommending Altuve.
Last year, he only had a 2.19 average, definitely aging.
Everywhere I see, I feel like places are pretty high on him, the articles I've read.
When you add in the Houston drama, you know, stealing pitches and then not having that, when you add in the fact that he's aging, when you add in the fact that he's 5'5" and might have a harder time hitting home runs into his 30s as other players.
I just saw Altuve and he caught my eye, but that might have been a blind spot, that 2.19, that is pretty shitty.
Second baseman, Altuve, Muncy, Moustakas, Moore. I feel like Muncy's okay, but he had a sub 200 average last year, 192. If we consider, okay, pass on a second baseman at this point because Altuve and Muncy, you know, they struggled last year. You could expect bounce backs, but at the same time, maybe you can get that same production from Mike Moustakas a little bit later. And if we shift away from Altuve, Nick Castellanos is an outfield option. Ooh, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. We were talking about those Toronto Blue Jays, 11 home runs and 3 stolen bases last year with a 3.08 average.
Yeah, man. you don't need to sell me on them. I'm excited about the Blue Jays team, as I said, and I think I like the way he seems to be trending.
So we're going into the ninth round here, and some of the names still available are Zach Greinke, old man Greinke. Sorry, Zach. Just for baseball terms, 37 years old.
Yeah.
Zach Wheeler, Max Muncy, Matt Chapman, Tommy Pham, Dansby Swanson, Jesus Luzardo, Alec Bohm.
I would, what jumps out at me, Greinke is old as shit, and we do already have a fair amount of starting pitching, but I think he's a fairly consistent guy.
A 3 ERA, 1 WHIP type of guy, but last year he did have a 4 ERA. Always a concern with, the velocity just keeps going down and down.
He is one of those guys that seems to keep figuring out a way to let his declining velocity not completely bite him in the ass, which are the type of pitchers that I'm not to say they're the one you should target in fantasy, but they're definitely ones I admire in real life.
If we're talking about Greinke, Wheeler, I also like Ian Anderson, young guy for the Braves. Big fan of his. Seems to do some good things with hard contact suppression, but early days, small sample size. I might go with Wheeler or Anderson over Greinke, just my personal opinion, because we do have a little bit injury risk with Kershaw, Snell, and Carrasco.
Now, it makes perfect sense. Yeah, we don't want another old-timer. What's left in the outfield, too?
In terms of outfield, we have Conforto and Gurriel on our team, and some of the outfielders available are Rosario, Pham, Alex Verdugo, and Yaz. I also like Byron Buxton. I'm always in on Byron Buxton.
So hearing what you just said to me is enough to say those guys don't exactly seem like one of them is completely breaking the mold from the other ones, and we'll probably get somebody of comparable value the next cycle around. So I would say let's go for the I like the idea of injecting some young blood into our rotation and going with Ian Anderson is what I would like to see.
I love it. And even though if he does have a little bit of an innings cap, he has an injury risk insofar as every pitcher has an injury risk, but we're not too worried about his age or, certain injuries catching up to him. So let's go Ian Anderson. And yeah, let's see when it comes back around, let's check outfielders and just see which outfielders are available, just because we do still have a need there. There's 4 outfielders in this league, but we can do best player available. Anyway, let's go to outfielder first. Yeah, and a lot of those names that I mentioned were still available. Alex Verdugo, Yaz, Byron Buxton, and Joey Gallo's peeking his head out, but we might be able to wait one more round before.
I love me some Rooster, Joey Gallo, but I agree. I think the Joey Gallo is, let's cross our fingers that he's there for the next time. Is this another 9 or are we like...
this is the short one, 5 picks.
It's so. The short one, yeah, whatever it is, 18 or whatever. So
we can pick Gallo next after this pick.
Yeah, I think you're right. I like the idea of having shares of Red Sox, but that's not anything fantasy baseball relevant, I guess. So I would say either... if we want to go outfield, I would say either Verdugo or Yaz, which is kind of like cheating when it comes to not picking a Red Sox. But I would say either one of those guys is who I would like next, just personally. But what do you think?
I like that.
What are we looking at with terms of like, what are, besides position, what are our scarcities when we're looking at who we've drafted so far? Like, do we need the average that Verdugo is going to give us, or what are our needs?
Good question. We're on fantasypros.com, and we can't pop up and see like where we're projecting the league, but we can see, okay, just eyeball it. Jose Abreu, power, no speed, right? Good average, though. Good average. Lourdes Gurriel, a little bit of an average risk, but gives you power and speed. Tatis, 280 average, elite home runs and stolen bases. Guerrero, we're not expecting stolen bases, but good average. I'm seeing a lot of good average. Michael Conforto hit 320 last year, but we're expecting a 260, 265, which won't hurt our average. That's about the mean. But,
and he'll give you like a sneaky, 5 to 10 stolen bases?
Yeah, exactly. I don't think we're wanting for really anything. And what this kind of, what we have so far kind of allows us to do is if we want that bad average guy like a Gallo, we can pick him. So we can really go in any direction. I do like Verdugo. I do love Yaz. And I put a tweet out about Giants batters just killed it last year. So many guys had an OPS around 850 or higher. Yaz, Darren Ruff, Alex Dickerson, Brandon Belt, Austin Slater, random guys still going around pick 300. The only one who isn't is Yaz. But part of it is that the Giants moved in their fences a little bit. And I just think it's becoming just slightly more of a hitter's park.
So, let's do it.
Yeah. So Yaz is great. He has that Red Sox bloodline. He's a guy who is definitely legit. So let's go with him.
And let's cross our fingers.
Imagine if Gallo win here.
All right, so he's still available.
All right, so with this pick, we're going to pick Gallo. We're at 123 overall, and Gallo's ADP is 142. We have the whole swing around before we pick again, and we just want the Rooster on our team, so we're doing it. Boom, bosh. And then our next pick will be in the 12th round, 142 overall. Let's see who's available.
And Mick, I will just add a reminder to the You Know It'll Be Faithful that we've built our team around pretty good batting average. So I think the reach for Joey Gallo, maybe 20 picks early, is a little more justified than first meets the eye.
Absolutely. I'm writing one of my underachiever articles on Gallo last year. He had a wrist injury. Year before that, he was having an MVP type season for the first half. And then he had an oblique injury as well as a wrist injury, had surgery. I'm hoping for a healthy Joey Gallo. I think we can get it.
We've been hyping him forever. But I will also say, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, I know, when we talk about Joey Gallo and we talk about his mashing, who's to say that he's not one of those Yelich-type players? He's a smart motherfucker, man. Joey Gallo, you just think of him as a masher, but he's got some Joey Votto in him, too. And if he might be one of those guys that, you know, he definitely talks about is his eye and what he lets go with pitches and what he swings at freely on pitches. And he's a pretty cerebral player. So maybe he's another one of those guys that really hated not being able to watch in-game tape, too.
I bet. He started out the year, though, so well. First eight games, something like crazy, 200 WRC plus. A couple days later, he complained of a wrist injury. I think he wasn't healthy. I'm hoping for a healthy season of Gallo, and I think we're going to see some crazy power numbers.
I want to see 240, 50 home runs, and 110 RBIs. That's my Joey Gallo.
Yeah, just make it happen. Come on, 2021. Let's go. So we're talking about who's available. We can go in any direction because there's one middle infielder. There's one corner infield available. There's outfield spots available, starting pitching. We haven't even talked about closers. Let's just take a gander.
Yeah, you know, a name caught my eye looking at the who's available. And I'm a little bit worried that we'd go in the direction of too many starting pitchers before we've had a closer. And I wanted to ask you in general, so I'm going to. Sixto Sanchez, he's been on my radar for a while. And, you know, last year was kind of a weird season, so I didn't keep up with him too much. But I think he started to show his potential last year.
Yeah, Sixto.
I guess it was his first year, but, you know.
It was his rookie year, 39 innings, 346 ERA, 121 whip with 33 Ks. He was traded from the Phillies to the Marlins for JT Realmuto. He was obviously top 10, 20 prospect in all of baseball.
He's a huge prospect, yeah. And what do you think he's looking at for innings allotted?
While I look up the sort of what the projections have for Sixto in terms of innings and what he's done in the minors in terms of innings, let's talk about Sixto. The one thing interesting is that he's not striking people out at an elite rate, you know, and he's got 99 mile per hour heat, but he struck out 33 batters in 39 innings. And he throws a sinker a lot, so he's one of those guys who kind of relies on contact and hitting ground balls. So he might not have that 9K per nine that you want to see, you know, nine or above. But he's a really, really solid pitcher, and he does have that heat. The projection systems have him for around 140 innings. In 2019, he pitched 114 innings in the minors. So that seems reasonable in terms of innings.
What do you think's going on? I mean, he's got to, you think it's just he's trying to get the ground outs, and that's why the strikeouts aren't there? I mean, he definitely seems to have the speed and the stuff to have higher Ks.
Yeah, I think he loves that sinker. And in order to get more whiffs, he might need to throw that four-seamer more than he throws the sinker. So if he does something where he sort of shifts his pitch mix, he's throwing more four-seamers, his breaking balls are developing, and sort of whittles that sinker out just a little bit, it's very possible that he could jump in.
It's probably better for fantasy, but that having a reliable sinking ball that gets easy outs is probably the smarter thing to do from a career trajectory point. So let's avoid starting pitching. And let's say, do we want to have any relievers? How many relievers have been taken so far? What are we looking at for what we have for relievers and, you know, how they've been getting taken on the board?
Just about 9 closers have been taken. The last one to be taken was Ryan Pressly, before that Brad Hand. And the 10th ranked closer on Fantasy Pros is Nick Anderson. Another one right under him is Kirby Yates.
How do you feel about the Tampa Bay closer in general?
To me, it's a little tough to rely on. Obviously, Nick Anderson is a beast. And if he's on your team, he's going to really help your ratios. 0.55 ERA, 0.49 WHIP last year. So
there's no doubt that Nick Anderson is a top pitcher, but you just feel like he's a little bit handcuffed by the Tampa Bay role, which from a fan standpoint is the best. Tampa Bay, I think it's awesome what they're doing. And I think the idea of having like your best pitcher only close games as opposed to pitch the most important innings. And I like the idea of having the openers and shit like that. I think it's fun and progressive and makes it a little more interesting. But, you know, all that combined can limit what he's going to do for you for saves, which he may justify making up for in the fact that, you know, he has a sub-1 ERA. But do you want to go closer? And if so, is it a Nick Anderson or is somebody else catching your eye?
We are at 142 overall, and there's a lot of guys bunched here. Kirby Yates, Taylor Rogers. Taylor Rogers had a 1.5 WHIP last year, so struggled there. Kirby Yates really struggled last year, but only 4 innings. Battled injuries, 12.46 ERA. If Yates is healthy, and he definitely has the job, I would, you know, really buy into him. So
let's cross our fingers that he's going to be available in another spin of the wheel. And where else do we need some help on our team as far as what positions we have and what we don't?
So if we consider, you know, just who's available from the hitting standpoint, Eric Hosmer, Rhys Hoskins, Ke'Bryan Hayes, Didi Gregorius, and...
Listen, Nick, I'm going to put you out of your misery. Do you want to draft Rhys?
Yeah, I'm down with Rhys. Really came on strong in the second half of last year's short season. Ended up with 10 home runs, 245 average, and nice counting stats, 35 runs in RBIs to solidify that corner infield spot. We can go with Rhys Hoskins here. No, yeah, I'm a Phillies fan. I like Rhys. A little bit of an average pull there, but we feel good about the guys we got so early in terms of average.
I'm not opposed either to getting a higher average guy later just to kind of fill in, you know, spots too. Somebody that may not start every day, but might throw in there when we need to fill a gap. I think that can make a big difference when it comes to, you know, a roto league and the end of the year and average stats.
Oh, yeah. So we have not filled catcher, middle infield, 1 outfield, as well as util. We have 4 starting pitchers, Kershaw, Snell, Carrasco, and Ian Anderson. So we could go starting pitcher. We could go closer.
I want to go closer, Mick.
All right, let's do it. And we still have Kirby Yates available. Still have Taylor Rogers available. People are buying back into Craig Kimbrell. That scares the heck out of me.
I have no interest in buying back into Craig Kimbrell, nor do I understand why people are buying back into Craig Kimbrell.
Yeah.
I would go with Kirby Yates if it was me.
I like Kirby Yates. If he's healthy, we're getting the closer for the Blue Jays. As we mentioned, we like the Blue Jays. So it seems like a clear decision. Let's go with Kirby Yates. We are going into the 14th round now. We could see who's available at starting pitcher, or we could just also see who's available in terms of remaining hitters.
So what number pick is it? Just out of curiosity.
166 overall.
All right. All right. I'd rather avoid another corner infielder just because I want to get our man Boom Boo, Trey Mancini, in a round or two, when I think he's still going to be available in his hopefully bounce back season, which to me is one of the fun things about sports is just when you like a guy in general. And one of the best stories of 2021 is that Trey Mancini's cancer free and ready to have a baseball season again. And we've talked about him a lot in the past casts, and it sucked that he got sick, and it's the best that he's better. All that is, you know, set aside for the fact that he's also just a hell of a baseball player. Right. And I think as weird as it is to say, and who knows what's lingering as far as he wasn't really able to practice as much and stuff, but his injury wasn't anything to do with any part of his body that can swing a bat or anything. It was just, it was cancer. And I think if he got enough reps in and practice in, he's just going to be normal Trey Mancini when it comes to his stats and everything else. Granted, they're the Orioles, but I think we should avoid a corner infielder until we maybe think that Trey Mancini is going to get taken. I also want shares in them. I have an emotional investment in him. I want to have a fantasy investment as well.
Yeah, whenever at all possible, you down with OVP faithful know this, we like to pick guys who we're going to root for, because not only do we think he's cool to root for, but also he's going to help our team. So let's do this. We'll pick Boom Boom Mancini next round. And this round, let's go. How about starting pitcher? You cool with that?
Yeah. And I will say, both me and you, I mean, it's not just us wearing our hearts on our sleeve. We wear our hearts on our sleeve when we stop and say, hey, listen, statistically, there's going to be a bust. There's going to be a hit. There's going to be, you know, a lot in between. But when you look and everybody's roughly the same chance of it, why not pick the person you're going to root for? I don't think either of us would necessarily do it if we saw a guy that was clearly somebody we should take ahead of it. It's more when you see, you know, 5 to 10 guys that are probably of similar likelihood of succeeding, we're going to pick the one that we want to root for.
Exactly. So, I mean, all things equal, we're going to go with the guy that we like better. Now, we have a lot of guys that we like on our team, like Tatis, Guerrero, Yaz, Joey Gallo. Maybe we reached on Gallo in terms of ADP, but we genuinely believe he's like a top 100 player. So everything we
do. I'm all for the reach in fantasy sports. If you're not reaching for players that you believe in, I don't think you're going to win the season. You know, you gotta make sure you get guys that you're big on.
You know what? I kind of like picking towards the end, you know, like first overall or in a 12-team league, 12th overall, because you're so far from your next pick every single time that you pick that you just have to go with your guys. And that forces me to pick my guy ahead of ADP or whatever it may be, because I'm like, he's not going to come back to me in 24 picks. So I might as well pick him now, you know, plant my flag on this person.
Yeah.
In terms of this round, some starting pitchers that we could look at, there's Germán Márquez, but I'm always like hesitant with Germán Márquez. I think you sort of have to balance which games you're starting and which games you aren't. 3.75 ERA last year, 1.26 WHIP. You know,
do you think that the dead and ball is going to matter at all when it comes to Márquez and it comes to Colorado and it comes to, is the ball going to be the same ball or is it going to be harder to knock it out of the park?
Yeah, I'm still hesitant. I'm still weary. If he ever got traded, like say some blockbuster happened where, you know, the Blue Jays or whoever went and got Márquez to shore up their pitching, Márquez would instantly become the equivalent of like a top four rounder.
I love him, but I just like to watch him pitch. And I think it's cool that he's able, I'm not saying I love him for this pick or just fantasy in general, but I just think it's pretty cool that you're able to have a ace like numbers, you know, averaged out over a season in Colorado where if you sneeze, the ball goes out of the park.
No.
So he's a cool guy in general, but yeah, I agree with you. In fantasy, it's probably not the smartest move.
Another guy, Mike Soroka, maybe not the biggest strikeout guy, but if he's healthy, if he's back from his Achilles injury, which he, you know, he's expected to be, he's rehabbing now in spring training. He's a guy who could really shore up our ERA and WHIP. So he's a guy I like. We talked about, you know, really focusing on, you know, some guys, they're not going to go full season. Some people are going to do 6-man rotations this year, but getting those guys who we know when they are pitching are going to be solid. He's one of those guys who could probably shoot up in terms of ADP if we get closer to the year and he's pitching, making starts, going 4 or 5 innings in spring training games. You could expect his ADP to shoot up.
I like it. I'm on board. let's do it.
All right. And when you're picking these injured guys, and like while we're on the subject of Sirocco, we should think about for your boy Chris Sale and Pedro Severino. These guys had Tommy John. They're going to be coming back in the second half of the year. My advice would be to the listeners would be, if you're in a head-to-head league where there's going to be playoffs at the end, be more, you know, prone to draft those guys. And when you're in a roto league, it's a little bit harder. You got to put them in your DL spots and hold them for that whole half of the year they're not playing.
When it comes to your pitchers that are going to be coming back mid-season, where do you rate the studs? You know, what are you thinking along those lines? I'm curious to pick your brain.
Yeah, I know that their rehabs are a little different, but if we just for a second throw out rehab, and we expect that they're all expected around July or August. Sale's the guy who I want more than the others, just based on track record. Here's a guy who kind of had a bad 2019 when he had a 4.40 ERA, but like the FIP and the XFIP and every underlying number was still pretty good. His WHIP in that year was 109. So this is like, oh, this is a big, terrible year. He had a 4.40 ERA. He still had a 109 WHIP. And in 147 innings, he had 218 strikeouts. Just crazy.
You want to know what else is great about Chris Sale? You know, if you have a Sale game, it's going to be over in 2 hours. You know,
it's
a fast game. And as a Red Sox fan, you might, I don't know what the Phillies reputation, I don't know if it's the same thing, but if you're a Red Sox fan, the games run long. You get Red Sox Yankees, that game's going to take fucking 4 hours, unless it's Chris Sale, in which case he gets the ball, he throws the ball. And it's something you appreciate, especially, and we talked about it before, pace of play is definitely an issue as a casual fan to sit there and be like, when's this game going to happen? So that's another cool thing about Chris Sale is that he's gung-ho when it comes to just letting it rip.
Love that. So Chris Sale got taken, unfortunately. His ADP is around 218. We are at 171 overall. He already got taken. Noah Syndergaard's ADP is around 243, and Luis Severino is 281. So when you're drafting, keep those names in mind. In terms of Verlander, I'm not sure about when he's expected to return.
He might not come back till later.
He is all the way down at 408 in terms of ADP.
Yeah, he's probably like the end of the season. You know, if you're in one of those head-to-head, you take him. Otherwise, you don't even bother.
Yeah. So keep those names involved when you get to this point in the draft.
Are there relief pitchers that go around this time that we would want to look at? Or is it like a silly thing to look at right now because who's on the board is still going to be there later?
The guys who are available right now, Drew Pomeranz, Rafael Montero, Alex Colome, Giovanni Gallegos, Matt Barnes. Matt Barnes has his job. Richard Rodriguez also pretty much has his job.
I would say Matt Barnes is who I would take as the closer. And this is just not because I'm a Red Sox fan. I'm kind of fading on the Red Sox. I'm trying to get enthusiastic for them. But other places seem to be, like, maybe it's just a couple of the Fangraphs guys and not the consensus. But I feel like people are kind of, you know, they're saying the Red Sox are going to be better than a lot of people think this year. I have a hard time believing it. But I would take Barnes because when you look at these names, right, you look at these closers, they all have something, which is why they've already not been taken. And I think the thing that Barnes has more than the other ones is just how many closing situations is he going to be given? And if he's given and handed a decent season, I think that he's going to close a decent amount of games. You know, the other ones, like the Padres are the Padres, right? Like they're going to be amazing, but who knows who's going to close? The Mariners, they're going to be the Mariners. Yeah. And the Red Sox are the one that's a little bit more, you know, who knows what they're going to be. I think they're the bigger variable. And if they are good, then we're going to get a lot of saves out of Barnes.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like that. He's got the job. These other guys that we're talking about, Pomeranz, Montero in Seattle, Gallegos, Amir Garrett, we're not sure if they have the job. So I like that. So we went with Matt Barnes. So we don't have a catcher. We don't have a middle infielder. In this place in the draft, 190 overall, I'm thinking we could go back to the starting pitcher well, or we could get we're wide open to get any hitter. So,
you know, before we
is it boom boom time? Hitter,
we're going boom boom. Yeah, for sure. Even though we need a middle infielder, I think we're still going to, you know, I don't think we're going to all of a sudden see the what's left just deplete us from middle infield in the next, you know, spin of the wheel with the draft. So let's go with boom boom Mancini.
All right, we're getting close to a full team. Maybe we'll fill up our lineup. We'll get maybe one or two more pitchers. and then we'll pretty much wrap up. We don't have to go to the very last round of this mock draft. So in terms,
what are there? Would just pull up catcher for a second. It doesn't even make sense to look at catcher right now, based off what's still on the board and what pick we have, or should we try to pull up a catcher? One thing, as you just did pull up catcher, that I saw that is one of those stories, just like the looking at the iPad and the in-game stuff and how big of an impact that has. It's hard to quantify, and it could mean everything or mean nothing. But I think some people are a little high on Buster Posey for 2021. Obviously, you know, relative to where he's getting taken, just because he said, I'm taking 2020 off. And people thought he was banged up in 2019, and it's catcher, right? I mean, if there's any position where, you know, little nagging things just fuck up your season, you know, you're in a position that just is screaming you're going to get injured at any minute. So just the fact that he's Buster Posey and he's definitely in his twilight years, but he took a whole year off, that's just something I saw that I thought was kind of interesting, that people seem to be a little higher on him because he voluntarily took 2020 off. I think he just said, I'm going to do that because it's a weird season and maybe I'll be better in 2021. You know, maybe it'll make more sense for me.
Lorenzo Cain, Ian Desmond took off 2020. Mark Stroman did, right? So a couple of guys did, and Ian Desmond announced that he's going to take off 2021 as well.
I will say, though, we're probably going to be able to get Buster Posey in another round.
Yep,
so
for sure.
Maybe if it was up to me, I know you're a Mitch Garver guy, though, so I'm totally fine going Mitch Garver, too. But I would either say go Mitch Garver and worry that we might lose him. So either go Mitch Garver now or roll the dice and see if we have Garver or Posey in the next round of catcher.
I want to roll the dice and see if Garver or Posey come back to us. So
one of them's going to.
Yeah, exactly. When there's two guys that you're sort of even on, sometimes you can roll the dice. Hopefully they're both not gone. But, you know, if this were a real draft, we'd be checking the other roster, seeing, okay, everybody's got a catcher, but this guy, yada, yada. But just as, in terms of the mock draft, we're taking our risk here. So this another place we could, another direction we could go is starting pitcher. And Tristan McKenzie is an interesting guy. Under watch pitch, but skinny guy. Came up last year, really good stats, 42 Ks in 33 innings. And it's the Cleveland Indians. All the guys that they've had through the years, like Clevenger and Bauer and, you know, more recently, Shane Bieber and Zach Plesac and Aaron Savali as well. When these pitchers come up, you take notice. And again, he had the central schedule last year, but a guy that people are pretty high on this year.
Just looking at the little we're seeing here and what we know about him, I think he's the type of player that you roll the dice on this late in the round or this late in the draft for a starting pitcher that probably will have an innings cap, but at the same time is somebody that a lot of people are high on and might be, you know, worth the risk and might give you a lot of strikeouts.
All right. So we are going to take Tristan McKenzie from the Indians. Urquidy went. Urquidy is another starting pitcher who Eno Saris is really high on. And so now we're at 214. Some of the interesting guys available are Jorge Polanco, a guy who's not going to be pretty much negative in any category except maybe home runs. I like him. He's pretty solid. Steady Eddie. He wasn't great last year, but 4 home runs, 4 stolen bases in basically a third of the games. We could go back to catcher and consider, see who's there. Garver and Posey are still there. And this is our short little turn. So our 5 picks, so we can roll the dice on.
Yeah, we can roll the dice. What pick are we?
214 overall.
And where are Garver and Posey? Just curious where they land on the
214th ADP and 236th ADP for Garver.
Yeah, one of them won't be there. We're not worried.
Yeah.
So how are we on relief pitching? Do we want to go do that again or do we want to do starting pitching?
So if we went, well, I'm cool to go in any direction. If we went relief pitcher, there's still a lot of the guys that we talked about earlier available. Richard Rodriguez seems to have the job for the Pirates. Giovanni Gallegos, we think he's the favorite in St. Louis. They have other guys like Hicks and Gant, but I feel like Gallegos kind of has that job pretty solidly.
The little I saw Gallegos last year, and I'm not going to pretend that I know shit about him, I liked what I saw. I was a Gallegos fan. I think beyond saves, I think he's going to give you other good numbers.
These whips from the last 2 years, an 8-1 whip in 19 and an 8-7 whip in 2020.
And I think that, and I'm seeing what you're seeing, I think that 3.6 ERA in 2020 might be a little high. And I like the idea of drafting a relief pitcher here. I don't know where you're at in it. Granted, I know you're going to be probably getting a lot of your relief pitching off the waiver wires and by being smart and reacting to the season. But I still like to just have an even balance, so to speak, where we're not like already starting off looking for those guys. Maybe we have a couple that are going to do it. And I think that Gallegos is the type of guy where even if he doesn't take the crown of the relief pitcher early, he's not going to hurt you on the other stats that you get.
Exactly. Or you get from the like a poor man's Nick Anderson. We're talking around here, and we got a guy with that kind of whip in consecutive years. Yeah, he's not going to hurt you. He's not going
to
hurt you.
And it doesn't hurt to throw those guys in the in-between games too, you know, or not in-between games, but when you're just trying to throw some pitcher spots together when you're starting pitchers, or maybe you have three aces and they're all playing around the same time each time, and all of a sudden you have a couple days where you want to throw a guy in there and just get some stats.
Yeah, for sure. I love daily moves leagues. They're my favorite. I love daily moves. I like to switch, like, you know, platoon guys. I love it. But I know a lot of
I can't stand the weekly leagues. I like a well-ran daily leagues move. It has to be well-ran, obviously. But if you have the right caps in place and the right carrots and sticks to make people make moves during a daily league, I think they're by far the best.
Yeah, I agree. And it's unfortunate that most of the main tournaments and everything are weekly because – exactly. I mean, it's fun. It's fun to switch those guys in. It makes those platoon guys more, you know, like palatable. And it makes you feel like a manager. You're tweaking every day. I like it.
Yeah. And like I said, too, if you put the caps in, it's not like you can just take advantage of it. If you have a commissioner or if the league's designed in a proper way, you could say in a poorly ran league that maybe somebody can just take advantage of like the system and daily leagues and stuff. And sure, there's a different talent to looking at a weekly league, but just the fact that you look at fantasy things that say this person's going to pitch twice this week, that's what dictates like certain moves. That's not like you're smart and you looked at matchups or like, you know, this guy has good stuff. It's literally just this person's going to be twice as much opportunity. Like, I'm sure you need to, it's its own animal and there's skill involved, but to me, it doesn't show that you're as focused on the fun things about fantasy baseball as more like the easy things to pick up on weekly leagues as opposed to the daily ones.
I agree. I wish it were the standard.
It also, I feel like, makes you sweat keeping people, which I think is just fun. Like, one of my favorite aspects is that pressure I feel when I'm like, I like this guy, but is he a guy I want to keep? Like, or is he a guy that I'm going to cut and hope is still on the board later when I go back to get him again, more than weekly league. So that's one of the things I love about fantasy baseball.
Totally. If we do go with a middle infielder, Polanco is an option. Chris Taylor is an option. We both like Paul DeYoung. So those three, those are shortstops. In terms of second base, Chris Taylor is also second base eligible. I probably wouldn't dip down to Colton Wong or Ryan McMahon.
People are big on Ryan McMahon now that, was it Arenado left?
Yeah, McMahon has first, second, and third eligibility.
But I think even if it's not like a one-to-one, I think people expect him to just getting a lot more playing time.
And it's Colorado. Colorado's always intriguing.
He was a monster prospect. Granted, he hasn't lived up to it, but he's a monster prospect too.
Yeah. I like Rockies. I like McMahon. I like Taylor. I like Polanco. I like DeYoung. So
McMahon will be on the board in the next round probably. So I don't know if we need to reach for him, but I'd like him. You know, I've been interested in him for a long time. He hasn't lived up to it. I'm not like beholden to him, but I just thought it was interesting when I saw an article that said people are a little higher on him than normal. Made me feel a little validated, even though he hasn't played and earned that validation yet. But I've been high on him in the past. So I don't think we should take him right now, but I hope he proves the value, you know, validates what other people are saying about him.
Yeah. So we can, if I had to pick one of these players, I'd probably pick Jorge Polanco to shore up that middle infield. And then maybe if McMahon gets back to us, we take him. So you cool with Polanco?
Yeah, totally. Like I said, at this point, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it.
Yeah, seriously, we're in the 19th round. This will be our 20th.
Thor just went. Oh. So who are you thinking next?
So let's see. Let's see if your boy McMahon's still available. He is. I say we go with him, and then we got to pick quickly on the wraparound. And
wait, have we done catcher yet?
We have not. And Garver went, so maybe we want to snag Posey just to make sure. And hopefully
let's snag Posey.
Yeah. All right, let's do that. We're going to snag Posey. We're going to wrap around here. Boom, no McMahon. So we will select McMahon with our 21st round pick. And we pretty much got ourselves a team here. So let's just check out starting pitcher, see if there's any starting pitcher we want to grab, maybe. And then I think we can pretty much call it a draft. What do you think, James?
Yeah, how do you feel about the squad?
I like it a lot. I like it an inordinate amount. Like, I really, really like it. Let's go with Griffin Can. We'll just put Griffin Can, a little cherry on top of the sundae.
And then, you know what I'll say about the team? And, you know, to those at home listening, you do need to keep in mind that this is a live time, like live feed. So I haven't even had time to really look at each position just because we're talking and I'm not controlling it and stuff. But first impression, and maybe I'll be totally wrong, is I think the number one strategy that we brought into this was to not reach on starting pitching, right? We said that this year starting pitchers are going early, and granted we took one in the third round, but we weren't focusing on starting pitching too much. We wanted to keep the bats in mind, and I feel like we still ended up with a pretty good shot at knocking starting pitching out of the park. What do you think, Mick?
I do too. I really like our – I think Kershaw is like a round 1-2 value, but we got him in the third round. Blake Snell, Ian Anderson, Mike Soroka, Carlos Carrasco, and Tristan McKenzie. I like it. I like it a lot. I think that's a good whip, and it's strikeouts. I think we did pretty solidly.
And I'll tell you, it's not like we have like that ace, you know? Like, it's not like we have a DeGrom or a Cole, but we have a good mix. For, you know, granted, hey, we need some things to go right, probably in our starting pitching. We have our Kershaw that's a little bit older and our Snell that's still pretty acey, but, you know, he's been a little bit more inconsistent. But he's still like a fairly young guy with amazing stuff. And then we have your young guy with Ian Anderson. We have your Soroka, and then you have your Carrasco that, again, goes back to, you know, a little bit older, but probably going to be pretty consistent. So, granted, we do have pitchers that there's a concern for each of them, but it's a different concern. You know, it's not the same concern for all of them. So it could happen, but it'd be terrible luck for that to, you know, for all the bad possibilities to pan out instead of the good ones. If we just average out on one of them suck, a couple others are average, and some of them are great, I think that we're going to have a good squad on our hands.
I'll go as far as to say, if these pitchers pitch, they're going to pitch well. It's just there is some injury concern or innings limit concerns, things like that. But I like our guys. Like, I like their skills. And I like the expectations of, like, how well they're going to do. And, James, should I read off the lineup?
Yeah, let's hear the lineup.
Catcher, Buster Posey. First base, Jose Abreu. Second base, Lourdes Gurriel. Shortstop, Fernando Tatis Jr. Third base, Ryan McMahon. Corner infield, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Middle infield, Jorge Polanco. Outfielder, Michael Conforto, Mike Yastrzemski, Joey Gallo, Boom Boom Mancini, and to round it out, the util spot, Rhys Hoskins.
I feel good about it. Not only do I love it because I love the players, but just hearing it right now, I think we did a really good job on the fly of balancing out the holes and the strengths. You know, I don't think average is going to kill us. I don't see anything that's going to kill us. And I think we, you know, I loved your write-up about Jeff McNeil. Maybe it was just a tweet. But, you know, the difference it can make from having a high average guy and then pairing him with like a Jeff McNeil with a Joey Gallo, I think we did a good job of that, which is one of the things, if you've been listening to the podcast at all the past 3 years, that I'm a huge believer in, is to not shy away from somebody like a Joey Gallo or a high average guy. Because if you marry them together in the right manner, with the right lineup around them, then they can, you know, you can have something that wins you a fantasy baseball league.
Yeah, obviously we draft it, we're gonna like it, but I think it's a good team. It'll be fun to sort of check it out throughout the year and see how we did. Like James said, there were some limitations. Like, I'm controlling the screen, sharing my screen, so James is sort of relying on me to click on the players and everything like that. I think that is going to wrap up this episode of the You Down with OVP podcast. As always, thank you for taking the time to listen to us, especially if you made it to the end here. Take care, James.
Later, Mickey.